Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Oh! Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Headshot. Bang. Oh.
I can do it to your mind. I can do it to your face. I can do it with integrity. I can do it with disgrace. But either way, I wanna kill you. I wanna blow you away.
Johnny, Johnny, Angry Johnny.
Oh, he's back. The goat is back. Oh, I can't call Johnny Bones the greatest of all time. Shh. Sunday, January 15th, the year is 2023, episode 380 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. Cody, stop me now if we don't have clearance for Poe's Angry Johnny. Ken Flo remembers well when he walked out to that. John Jones is back, folks. Johnny Bones Jones is back. Good morning, Kenny.
How you doing, man? It's just such a great walkout song. So good, so appropriate. Man, I love it. I love it. I, you know, not only myself, the whole mixed martial arts world has been waiting as to when John Jones is going to fight again. Obviously, he's been preparing for the heavyweight division for a long time, which I think has served him well. Obviously, not being away or being away from the octagon for so long, it may hurt him in a certain extent, but getting up to that heavyweight division, doing it properly, putting on the muscle, doing it, adjusting your body for that for years takes time. And I think he's ready, and I can't wait to see John Jones unleash hell in the heavyweight division.
All right, a lot to get into today in headlines. Of course, we will recap UFC Fight Night, Strickland versus Imavov, some other MMA headlines as well. Don't forget now, full episodes of the Anik and Florian Podcast can be accessed on the DraftKings YouTube channel. You can also access clips on our Anik and Florian Podcast channel, as well as Bilal Muhammad and Jason Anik's Remember the Show. Full details on this partnership coming up later in our second episode this week. Above all else, I think the most important part of this partnership, we're going to do two shows a week now instead of one. And that has not been the reality for this show over the last 8 years. We do have to hold the rest of the details until Thursday, though. Thank you for your patience as far as all of that is concerned. I am reading right from Brett Okamoto's article at ESPN.com. And if you don't know, in print journalism, it is lead spelled L-E-D-E. And this is a brilliant lead, right? Simple. John Jones, arguably the greatest fighter of all time, will fight Ciryl Gane for the heavyweight championship at UFC 285 on March 4th. That, according to UFC president Dana White. He is arguably the greatest fighter of all time, wherever you stand on that. And he is back for the first time in a long time. That means Francis Ngannou has been released. He is no longer the undisputed UFC heavyweight championship. And Dana said that the UFC and Francis negotiated a new contract for the better part of 2 years, and the deal would have made him the highest paid heavyweight in the history of the company. Of course, remains to be seen how long it would take him to sort of realize that distinction. But Dana White said the highest paid heavyweight in UFC history remains Brock Lesnar, who retired back in 2017. Here's the quote from Dana Ken Flo. I've told you guys this before. If you don't want to be here, you don't have to be here. I think Francis is in a place right now where he doesn't want to take a lot of risk. He feels like he's in a good position where he could fight lesser opponents and make more money. We're going to let him do that, release him from his contract, and give up our right to match. Francis did not immediately respond to requests from ESPN for comments.
Wow. It's very surprising, you know, or maybe not, based on the back and forth that's been going on between Ngannou, Dana, and the UFC. I'm very interested to see where exactly he's going to go. I'm sure he will have a lot of suitors. I know he's had a lot of people who have been interested in him. But I think this goes a little bit further than money or him wanting to face lesser challenge. You know, and this is the problem, is when you go back and forth, whether it's you're talking about Major League Baseball or the NFL, and you get an owner or a coach or something that says something bad about you, or something that happens back doors, that, you know, behind doors, that doesn't go well. You'll get certain fighters, certain professional athletes that are going to make decisions that go beyond just the monetary reward. So curious to see where he ends up then.
So I'm not an executive, right? Israel Adesanya got a long-term deal. I don't really know how Francis Ngannou, in terms of his promotional value, relates to Israel Adesanya. In terms of the internal metrics, in terms of how he does on pay-per-view, I know Francis Ngannou to be a walking major motion picture, right? He's the baddest man on the planet, to be sure. His story is unbelievable. I thought he was going to be a superstar in a stratosphere that maybe few fighters had ever realized, maybe just a tier below Conor McGregor. And I think largely when you're that guy, you feel like you deserve at least $5 million to show. Now, I don't know what he's looking for or what exactly he's making or how it all works in terms of the exact numbers on the pay-per-view revenue. But certainly it's disappointing, right? I mean, as somebody who called a lot of his signature knockouts and wins, and just when you thought, I know he's 35 years of age. No, Ngannou maybe is older than that. John Jones is 35. But, you know, you still felt like you might have 3 or 4 title defenses, big fights for Francis Ngannou. So as much as we're going to sit here and talk about John Jones and Ciryl Gane, and as much as he might end up with you guys in the PFL, I mean, this is, isn't this disappointing that, you know, the combat sports leader and the consensus best heavyweight in the world are parting ways, or no? All right. Ngannou 36, by the way, September 5th, 1986. Kenny, what do you have for me on all that?
Yeah, so I'll say this. I think that certainly the UFC fans want to see him in there, right? I think that there are some interesting challenges for him, I think especially in the PFL. But yeah, I think a lot of people, when you get a champion in the UFC, it's rare that we ever see a champion just kind of give up the belt and go somewhere else. This is not a common thing. And I think the fact that he, how accurate it is and whether this was actually going to happen, I don't know. But I think the boxing fight or that was proposed between him and Tyson Fury is playing a part as well, because it could seemingly give him the opportunity to both do boxing and do mixed martial arts. And the UFC just isn't about that. They're not going to promote or co-promote with many people. Conor McGregor was the exception, and I know they had to jump through hoops and a bunch of stuff to get that fight with Floyd Mayweather going. So, yeah. I think that played a part of it. I think the back and forth between Dana, the UFC, and Francis and his management had something to do with it. And perhaps he feels like he can best, you know, leverage something outside of the UFC. So I wish him the best. It would be awesome to see him in the PFL. It would be, unbelievable. We'll see where he ends up. He still is super talented, but he is coming off a pretty bad ACL surgery. You know, knee reconstruction can take a long time. I hope he's fully healed from that.
So Dana saying Ngannou feels like he's in a good position where he could fight lesser opponents and make more money. So Tyson Fury is not that, right? Tyson is the consensus hardest fight for Francis in either boxing or MMA. And it stands to reason it is the biggest payday by a significant margin, right? If he does get that boxing payday against Tyson Fury, and this is pure conjecture and maybe informed speculation, but, you know, it might take him 2-3 UFC fights to realize that payday, right? So if he gets that singular fight, you can certainly defend the decision. But as a mixed martial arts fan, this is wildly disappointing that Francis Ngannou is stepping away. And John Jones, as Dana says, ready, willing, and able to fight any heavyweight, including Francis Ngannou. The notion that John Jones, or Daniel Cormier for that matter, right, wouldn't fight Francis Ngannou or would be intimidated by that setting. You just don't know those guys as competitors. So John Jones, I think, is disappointed in some part. Maybe not Ken Flo. Cyril Gane's the fucking man. But would you argue that John Jones not getting a chance to fight Francis Ngannou or to fight the consensus greatest UFC heavyweight of all time, Stipe Miocic, maybe some disappointment there in terms of the aesthetics of the matchup. But would you agree that John Jones was willing to fight any goddamn man in the world at 265 pounds?
There's no question about it. These are the fights that he gets up for and where he truly can shine. What was particularly interesting about the fight against Francis Ngannou is you have this guy who is an absolute monster who is 100% capable of knocking out John Jones, and has the athleticism to match someone like John Jones. Cyril Gane, absolutely phenomenal fighter, highly technical, has been active, has shown his toughness and his technique. I love that fight, but to me, he's very similar to John Jones in how they move and the different weapons that they have and the varied weapons and footwork that they have. So to me, I think that's an easier fight, not an easy fight, but a far easier fight stylistically for him than a Francis Ngannou.
UFC fans should be very thankful for Cyril Gane and Curtis Blaydes. And certainly it's disappointing that Tom Aspinall is on the men, right? But to have elite heavyweights that are ready, willing, and able to headline and to fight every 3 months and fight for interim championships, right? I mean, Curtis Blaydes doesn't seem like a draw a line in the sand type of guy. Cyril Gane is always ready. I mean, these guys, right? This seemingly just got finalized. All indications are, if you've been on social media, that Cyril Gane and John Jones have been training for this date. But, you know, it really is nice if you're a promotion to have guys like Cyril Gane. As far as the betting line is concerned, Ken Flo, perhaps Cody can chase these results on social media. We did throw a poll out there. Sort of a soft poll. I just threw the betting line out there. I didn't encourage people to vote. But did you see that, Kenny? Do you know what the betting line is on DraftKings Sportsbook right now?
I did not. I'm really curious. Is John Jones a slight favorite there?
It's close. Cyril Gane actually is minus 135. And John Jones is plus 115. Now, 72% of votes have been on John Jones to win the fight. So I am going to hop onto the DraftKings Sportsbook application. Not now, but right now. And we're going to see what the price is right now and see if that has changed a lot since we were on here earlier this morning. It has moved a little bit. So Cyril Gane minus 120 and John Jones is now even money. So, you know, perhaps our poll has moved that number a little bit. I'm not so sure.
Interesting.
Code, wow. By the way, AF Pod. Yes, if you would like to get involved as a new customer on DraftKings Sportsbook coming up this weekend. But a lot to digest, man, right? And later in the week, we will get into UFC 286 because it looks like that is starting to come together as well. But John Jones has reportedly signed a new 8-fight contract. And, you know, John Jones and Conor McGregor, and we've talked about this, but it's like they are two unique cases in mixed martial arts, right? One of them is the consensus best fighter we've ever seen. The other one is the biggest superstar in mixed martial arts history. And both of them really want to fight. You know, I think this could be a big year. I mean, last year was big for all you Islam Akhachev and Arman Tsarukyan fans. But in terms of, you know, we got some real potential star power coming back here, second quarter, first quarter, 2023.
Well, John, how long has it been since John Jones has fought? Is it 5 years, 6 years?
You know, I failed to look that up. So off the top of my head, I want to say like 2019, right?
Okay. All right. So, right.
The
okay,
Dominic
right. So
Reyes fight, was that his last fight?
Yeah.
Was that his last fight? I mean, my memory not great right now. This is compelling on the audio side. Yeah, UFC 247, Johnny Bones Jones, Dominic Reyes, February 2020. just a few weeks before COVID-19 here in the U.S.
Look at me, slightly off there. I'm like 5, 6 years, 7. Yeah. So it's been a few years. Okay. So I'm curious to see how many of the new fans that the UFC has gained over the last few years are going to be introduced to John Jones for the first time and perhaps the real John Jones, right? Because I don't know if that was the most motivated, guy who was super motivated and training hard at 205 pounds. I don't think he felt scared in those 205 pound fights. I think he knew that he could give average training camps, give average efforts on fight night and still win the fight. I think being in the heavyweight division, being away, trying to prove a point, having a chip on his shoulder, I think we're going to see the John Jones of old. And I think we're going to see a lot of tricks that we haven't seen in a long time.
Very, very exciting. I look forward to that. It is March 4th, UFC 285. Looks like John Jones is hopeful that Henry Cejudo might even be in his corner. So doesn't look as though Sterling and Cejudo are going to be locked up on March 4th. But tremendous stuff. Johnny Bones Jones back in your life. And big opportunity for him and, of course, for Ciryl Gane, as they reportedly will fight for the undisputed UFC heavyweight championship. All right. So, you know, my bosses, my great producer, Zach Candido, Lappy LaPlante, Mike Ricci, sometimes listen to this show. Of course, all spearheaded by the great Craig Borsari. Perhaps I hope they're not listening right now as I read this text from our producer, Cody Merrow, over the weekend, and me and my twin bro. He writes, I'm officially at the quote, I'm over the apex point of my fandom. Same sentiment for me. We have so many positive things to say about Sean Strickland and Dan Ige and Roman Kopylov and the entire card. But yes, as a fan sitting home, I am over watching fights that are emanating from the UFC apex, so much so that I did watch on mute from my cell phone because, you know, why not? And I was watching the football game with the audio. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. It's a different take, man. Like, the fans are the lifeblood of the sport. And I don't think any UFC executive would be offended to hear that type of language.
I agree with that sentiment. I think for business reasons, obviously, it's been quite advantageous, quite beneficial to the UFC to have their events there. I mean, they're saving a ton, millions of dollars having it there. But there's no question. There is no debate, John. The energy that you get when you're in a crowd that is filled up in a stadium with that kind of noise and energy is just different. It must be different for you calling the fights. It's different, certainly different for the fighters who are involved in these fights. And of course, for the fans, they want to be a part of the action as well. So curious to see how the schedule changes for them here in 23.
I agree. And it seems like there are a handful of apex shows during the first quarter, but it does effectively change the sport. Maybe not as much as like open scoring would, but there are athletes that love competing here in this little regional sized octagon. And there are other fighters that enjoy all the pageantry that comes with sort of a number card at a more championship setting. Just kind of felt like it had to be set. But as far as the action was concerned, I thought it was a pretty good card overall. And what else can you say about Sean Strickland and those who suggest that the best way to prepare for fights in a cage is to spar? Because when you essentially come off the couch, and I know he's a 24/7, 365 guy who spars a lot, right? But I don't know, man, someone like me who can barely get through a 35-minute high-intensity strength and conditioning workout to fight another man over 25 fairly high-paced minutes at times, when you haven't had the requisite training camp, got a lot of praise for Sean Strickland here on a Sunday morning. What do you think about all that?
I would say this, for someone who is sparring as much as Sean Strickland, and when you combine that with the experience that he has inside the octagon, Sean Strickland's the guy who can do that and even do that in a 5-round main event. I don't think there's a whole lot that can, just because they're not sparring all the time. I think the only caveat with that is that it's hard to make big jumps, I think, in my opinion. You need to be doing a lot of scenario work and isolate certain skills to make those improvements. I think that's why we see Sean Strickland largely the same fight over fight. I don't see a whole lot of differences anyways, but getting someone who's going to be mentally strong, physically strong, and ready to go at a moment's notice, the training that Sean Strickland does, he's well suited for a fight like last night, which was extremely impressive.
See, that's why Kenny Florian gets 51% of Anakin Florian LLC, and that's why I'm at 49%, because you're absolutely right, because you're able to be critical, and ultimately that's what you're paid to be as an analyst, is be critical. But you're right, in terms of the skill development, incredible pro career, pro record, but yes, I mean, most people sort of felt like we were sitting down, conditioning ourselves for a 25-minute fight, and that's what played out. A lot of my buddies like that over 4.5 rounds. What do you have for us in totality on the fight? It was Strickland by unanimous decision over Nassourdine Imavov, 49-46 times 2, 48-47 from the dissenting judge. Imavov had his moments. Numbers were pretty close, but you know, I felt like it was a Sean Strickland fight pretty clearly.
Yeah, listen, I don't think Sean Strickland is the most orthodox fighter out there. He does some things which are a little bit odd. There's times where he looks a little bit like he's off his rhythm. He throws arm punches for the most part, but it doesn't matter because he's effective and he knows how to win rounds, and his volume and his pressure and his pacing, and he knows what he needs to do to get himself back into the fight if he needs to. So this experience and this amount of sparring is really paying off. I would like to see certain improvements technically, but this kid, just on toughness, pace, and pressure alone, can beat a lot of guys in that division. So I thought it was extremely impressive, especially given the fact that Imavov is a problem. Technically, he's very impressive. He throws very hard shots. I thought he landed some good shots, but Strickland has a tremendous chin. He's very tough, very durable. And I just thought that his pacing and his volume was what won him the fight last night.
So going into what was to be a main event against Kelvin Gastelum, who, if you don't know, had to pull out of the main event during fight week, nasty jaw injury and what looked to be some sort of infection on his face as well. I'm not sure exactly which was worse as far as him pulling out of the fight. But Sean Strickland gets the win and largely gets the bulk of the praise, but it is Nassourdine Imavov, right, who essentially puts his middleweight ranking on the line in a light heavyweight fight. And it seems to me like takes two to tango in these short notice equations. I'm not sure Imavov got enough credit for willingly stepping up and sort of, you know, as the guy who was all the rage coming in, as the guy who the card was built around, like putting a lot of his momentum on the line in what was a short notice setting for him too, you know?
Absolutely. And he came in, what, 10 pounds lighter than Strickland on weigh-in day two. It was supposed to be a 185-pound fight. And obviously that's what he was preparing for. So he had to deal with a much larger opponent. I think that Imavov is going to learn a lot from this fight against Strickland. I think there's little adjustments he could have made that could have won him the fight. I think there's times where he checks out and starts to cruise in fights where it seems like he's just not present there. And checking out at the highest levels of the sport, you just can't do it. You can't do it against anyone, let alone someone like Sean Strickland. So I didn't see enough volume from him. There was times where he can kind of disengage and reset. And I think he felt like he just needed to kind of go right back at Strickland and fight his kind of fight. And that's not what you want to do against someone like Strickland. You have to find ways to drag people into your fight and not adjust to them. I just felt like Imavov was trying to adjust himself to the style of Strickland. And that can be a difficult fight to win when you do that.
All right, good stuff there. We'll see what happens with Sean Strickland moving forward. Seemingly is going to stay at 185 pounds. And I would say if he can...
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
All right. Did my mic just unplug again? I don't know what's going on here. Audio drop again. It seems like my mic is doing its own thing today. But I was talking about Dan Ige. And, you know, sometimes parenthood can go both ways for UFC fighters. Obviously, you were not a parent when you were fighting. But, you know, I believe this is Dan Ige's first win since becoming a father. And man, he was waiting to exhale. You saw it in the post-fight interview after the fight. Huge result for Dan Ige. And nothing like being able to have a knockout like that when your fucking nickname is 50K, to be able to have a knockout like that. And it's all about location, right? I mean, this was not like power slap shit where he's like in a full squat, bending down full throttle. Just perfect technique execution and big bonus for Dan Ige over the weekend.
Yeah, Dan Ige has got that FU kind of power. And he doesn't need to wind up very, very big. He stayed patient throughout that fight. I thought he fought a perfect fight for the most part. He was backing up Damon early in that fight, backing him up, keeping him off balance, mixing things up. Actually went for a takedown there at the end of round one and was landing solid shots. And you could see Damon respected that power very early. He seemed hesitant because of it. And Dan Ige finished him off with that walk-off KO, man. That was sick.
All right, so Ige certainly positioning himself for another big fight at 145 pounds. Roman Kopylov, I don't know if you saw that, really resonating with a lot of people. I mean, my twin brother and Cody going fucking nuts about Roman Kopylov. I just like pronouncing his name, if I'm being candid. No, really good fighter. And obviously the bodily investment and Punahele Soriano, so much potential. And I'm not the guy you go to as far as the cardiovascular base and all of that stuff necessarily, but pretty early in this fight, Kenny, it sort of became for Puna like labored just 1-2, like labored 1-2. What were your thoughts on Roman Kopylov and Puna?
Yeah, Kopylov, man. I might have to perm my hair after that performance. I was really impressed, man. I've been sleeping on him a little bit. I haven't been too impressed, but I thought it really came together for him very well. I thought his feinting and how he was setting up his strikes, he seemed more sophisticated. He seemed more patient. He seemed more confident in this fight against Soriano, who is a very dangerous out for anybody. But I think you hit the nail on the head there. Soriano was just kind of looking for big shots. And I think he does have the power to take you out with one or two shots, but you cannot rely on that. To me, it seemed like he was forcing the knockout. He wasn't patient enough to allow the knockout to kind of organically happen. He was forcing it. And anytime you're forcing it out there, especially at the elite levels of the sport, it rarely happens for you. So for Soriano, he's going to have to be more sophisticated, get some more weapons in his tool belt, because to me, it seemed like he was trying one or two things, it wasn't working, and he was just kind of losing confidence and just hoping for that one shot.
Yeah.
And Kopylov, I thought, was way more defensively sound than I've seen him and just had more tools, more weapons, and took him out. And again, to your point about that first round, Soriano just not pacing himself well, just looking for those big shots, getting tired early on. And if you're showing that at this level, and Kopylov isn't a top 5, top 10, top 15 guy, I don't think, at this stage, it doesn't bode well for Soriano. He's got some work to do, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's all fair as far as Punahele Soriano, and we'll see what happens with Roman Kopylov. And, you know, I thought Dominic Cruz had a particularly good night on the sticks, but it felt like all night long he kept saying, you know, you guys got to work the body. Like, I just feel like all night long he was suggesting to headhunters that they needed to mix in some shots to the body. Roman Kopylov did that very well, and he gets what you could argue is the biggest win of his career. All right, Ray Longo Minute coming up in 60 seconds. First, though, UFC 283 taking the action to the next level this weekend to begin 2023. I can't wait to get to Brazil, leaving here in about 48 hours because, of course, this Saturday, not one but two titles on the line, and one of them the historic fourth meeting between Davison Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. A lot of ways for you to get in on the action at UFC 283 via the DraftKings Sportsbook, and I would probably go check out the application right now. Now, DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC, and new customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Perhaps Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill will break through and become a first-time UFC champion. Maybe, though, you like the ageless Glover Teixeira, slight underdog right now to become a two-time UFC champ. Either way, a lot of compelling matchups on the board. And if you want even more action, you can also get in on the football playoff action this weekend as well. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code AFPOD. New customers bet $5 on UFC 283 and get $200 in free bets instantly. No matter what, that is code AFPOD this Saturday at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Oh, clear your schedules. Fast forward to this part of the program, the Ray Longo Minute, every week, dating to episode one here on the Anakin Florian Podcast. All right, I guess March 4th doesn't need Aljamain Sterling anymore. Looks like John Jones might be coming back. Did you hear?
Yeah, I heard. I heard the T-Mobile Center is in a lot of trouble. That's what I heard.
All right, so I don't even know where to begin. I guess with you, I kind of would like to begin with Francis Ngannou, who I believe is the scariest power puncher in UFC history. People oftentimes ask me the most scared I've ever been sitting octagon side. I thought Ngannou had killed Alistair Overeem. I thought he had popped his head off his body or broken his neck or whatever. I guess I'll start there. It looks like the UFC's undisputed heavyweight champion has been released / freed from his contract. That's big news.
I think that's huge news. Where do you want to start?
I think it's a little bit disappointing for me as a mixed martial arts fan that Ngannou's next fight seemingly is not going to be in the UFC and it won't be against John Jones.
Right. No, I'm with you 100%. I mean, we don't know what the negotiation deals were. You know, Dana's saying he was going to make the most money of any heavyweight, but what does that even mean? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, everybody's complaining about fighter pay, but to lose your heavyweight champ, I don't think is a good look. Especially if the guy goes out and, you know, makes a killing, right? Because then everybody's going to want to do that, right? Everybody will jump on that bandwagon. So, I don't know.
I understand Kenny Florian has a nice smile. He's a very good analyst, but it's like Jake Paul. And I mean, it's like, what is the attraction? Is it Ken Flo? Jesus.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kenny. Jump in. Like, get me started on this.
Francis Ngannou, we're waiting for you. Come on up. The water is great.
Oh, that's Kenny's dream, right?
Ken Flo, incidentally, exponentially more excited about the Francis Ngannou news than the Jake Paul news, if I could say that.
Yeah. All right. Where do you think Francis ends up?
Well, here's the thing. If he fights Tyson Fury in a singular boxing match, however it goes, right? And whatever the betting line is, that's not the point, right? If Tyson Fury has any remote interest in that fight and Francis Ngannou gets that singular payday, then you can argue this was all worth it. But
right. If not, I mean, what does he do? Go into the PFL for $1 million and win that? They have to bump that, Ken. You got to tell those guys they got to bump it to like $8 million.
Something tells me he'd make more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, he will.
Yeah, or, hey, maybe he goes and fights Tyson Fury one fight. He makes 40, 50 million. Yeah. He's like, take it easy, guys. Yeah. That was nice seeing you.
It was weird when I heard it yesterday. It is a weird thought, but a very weird thought. But I was like, you know, this is like what I have, not a problem with the PI, but it was from the beginning, like with all of that stuff. You know, maybe they know how bad that knee surgery was. Maybe, you know, maybe they got the inside track now and they know, you know what, he's probably only got one fight. Maybe he re-injures that. It's a bad injury. I don't know why, but I don't see how you let that guy go. He couldn't have been asking for, you know, that much money where, you know, the company is making money and you let a guy like that go who's really just about in the prime of viewership for everybody. So that, I don't know, if that just hit me like yesterday when they announced it. It's like, you know, and then I think Dana said something like, you know, I think he doesn't want to take a risk or, you know, so that's where it gets tricky to me, right? Where
that
everybody
is interesting.
Has the information, right?
I hadn't thought about that angle at all, right? The UFC PI essentially funded by the promotion with all of this intimate injury knowledge. Now, in the NFL right now, you have Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson, who is not playing due to a knee injury. And he is eligible for a massive contract, and candidly, I hope somehow the New England Patriots find a way to get the guy, right? But he can be contractually controlled by the franchise. He is sitting out right now. They can franchise tag him, but obviously they are acutely aware of the medicals. Lamar is as well, but it's interesting. I hadn't necessarily thought about that angle. I don't know, man. It's disappointing for me regardless.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to have seen him stage. You know, when Frivola fought in New York, Oh, shit. I did extra rounds with TJ at Dave and Buster's, but we had. We had Francis on. He's a sweet guy, man. He's a really well-spoken, nice, humble guy. I hate
as long as he's not hitting you.
As long as he's not hitting you. Yeah, right.
So you had Francis Ngannou on extra rounds at Dave and Buster's. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, you interviewed him when you were on extra rounds?
So wait, hold on a second. Yes.
Okay.
That would be correct.
All right.
So there's two options for Francis I'm going to go with. It's the PFL or the Slap League.
So
he might have let him go just so he could go in the Slap League. That's option number two.
Well, for all the Minutemen, when you're done with the Anakin Florian podcast episode today on the DraftKings YouTube channel, you can head over to UFC Fight Pass and check out Longo interviewing Francis Ngannou. Sure, it's absolutely fucking riveting.
And TJ DeSantis. Don't leave TJ out. TJ really was the star of the show.
All right, so John Jones versus Ciryl Gane. Who do you think is the betting favorite right now, or do you already know?
I don't know. I would say Ciryl Gane's the betting favorite.
See, that's why you get paid the big bucks. He is the betting favorite, albeit slightly. Sounds like you like the matchup for Ciryl Gane a little bit.
Well, you know, look, the guy hasn't fought in 3 years. Who knows, you know, what he's been doing. I hope he's been training. But I like that. Ciryl's been active. He looks like he knows how to navigate, you know. I mean, he's a big guy, so I think Jones, anytime he had any problems with anybody, were guys that were kind of his size. Like the first Gustafson fight, and even the guy I thought beat him, what was his name? Jeez, I already forgot. Come on, help me out.
Sorry, I was actually...
Reyes.
You know what I mean? Okay. So I think he has trouble with the bigger guys, and this guy's quick. You know, he knows how to, he's light on his feet. He can mix it up. I mean, obviously, there's a big discrepancy in the wrestling whiz where I would think he's going to take the fight. I'm sure he's still got some pop there. But, you know, it's a 5-round fight, so we'll see. But I could see him taking Ciryl down and just ending the fight in the first round if he wanted to. But I'd still put Ciryl down as the favorite.
Yeah. So I don't want to get into John Jones's play sort of historically, right? But when you see people like me, right, there's been a GOAT sighting, or when people write John Jones, arguably the greatest mixed martial arts athlete of all time, is back. Like, where do you stand on that? Just given some of the things that that he has brought upon himself in his career, if you will.
Wait, we go over that again with the.
Well, I guess I'm just curious, right? Like Anderson Silva, right? Some people don't consider him the greatest of all time because of the transgressions late in his career. You know, some people denigrate John Jones as far as that is concerned. That's why I think most people believe GSP is the greatest of all time. Some would suggest Khabib Nurmagomedov. For me, the greatest mixed martial arts athlete I've ever seen compete in an MMA setting is John. I'm just curious where you stand on all of that, you know, because you led when I mentioned John Jones with T-Mobile better, you know, tighten up, right? So I'm just curious where you stand and, you know, how you feel about him sort of, you know, re-entering the fray.
Yeah, well, look, I tell you, you can't deny what he's done. That's impossible, right? I mean, the guy can fight. He was great. You know, obviously is out of the octagon antics I can't stand. And, you know, to me, that's always going to diminish who he is. I don't want to just look at people for the way they fight. I want to look at the way people conduct themselves in life. And that's where I think he fails. And GSP hits a home run more than him. And even Khabib, I mean, even what Khabib's doing now with the just want to spend time with the kids. These are things that are huge that people, I think we're in a society, they don't even understand. But, you know, I think when you have principle and you have character, I want to put that above the fighting. So for that reason, I'm going to go, you know, with guys like that. I mean, I don't know. Why would we leave out Demetrius Johnson? He's probably the greatest of all time. I mean, the things he did in the octagon were phenomenal. And he's still going. I mean, I still think his greatest thing he did today was, as of today, was when he beat that Thai guy in that 3-round crazy fight. He had to do the first round with a killer, and he survived, and then he took him down and submitted him. So I think that guy, to me, you know, when you start doing other type of things outside like that, I think that defines you and it pulls you away from that would be like making, you know, John Jones do one round with Mike Tyson, then he has to go, you know, that's not easy to do. You know,
no, it's a tremendous oversight by me. I wasn't trying to be inexclusive or exclusive, but you're too small for me to be the GOAT. 120, bigger man to be the greatest of all time, at least for me.
He did some crazy stuff.
Like,
when he picked that guy up and armbarred him in midair. Come on, I mean,
technically, he is unbelievable. I mean,
you can't deny, the way he fought in the round.
Just fucking around, right?
He's disgusted. He's actually. You're mad.
All right. Did you watch?
So John Jones, I think, look, you can't deny that the guy could fight, period. And you could put him up there as one of the greatest to ever do it, unequivocally. I just, you know, there's got to be an asterisk next. I mean, the PDs, it's just awful. I don't know. Take him off the list, matter of fact.
All right.
The more we keep talking about it.
So I don't know if you know this, but Matt the Steamroller Frivola is going to join us in about 5 minutes because there's a really special circumstance going on in his life right now. So I just wanted to prepare you for that.
Unbelievable.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. But did you watch Sean Strickland and Nassourdine Imavov in the UFC fight night this weekend?
100%.
All right. So before you get into whatever wets your beak as far as the highlights are concerned, I do want to read you this from our producer, Cody Merrow. He sent this text this weekend, okay? And Cody's diehard, right? He watched all 41 UFC live events last year. He didn't watch all the prelims, but he watches all of these shows. And he wrote last night, I'm officially, and maybe this is in part because the NFL was also going on, okay? Yeah. And now he's saying he watched every fight this past weekend. I don't fucking believe him. All right.
Easy, Cody.
Wow.
He wrote, I'm over the apex point of my fandom. So Cody's having a hard time like watching these fights from the UFC apex. And I just want to ask you, in terms of your viewership, I know you're coaching every weekend. You're constantly cornering guys when maybe there aren't a lot of fans, although Ring of Combat's fucking loud, banging it out all the goddamn time. But I don't know, man. Like, sometimes it feels anticlimactic for me watching as a phone when, you know, they cap a post-fight interview and it sounds like a funeral, man. And I feel like Cody's sentiment is one that is shared by the majority.
I'll tell you, it's a weird week to ask that because they starved us for like 3 or 4 weeks. So I was happy to see anything. I'm a junkie.
Yeah.
But I think that point is really well taken at this point. But look, it's like.
Well, basically, he followed up. He said that Umar Nurmagomedov knockout would have popped any arena from Siberia to Hawaii, and feels like you're losing out on these seminal moments.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing like in a COVID In the middle of a pandemic for DC and Stipe to complete their trilogy at the Apex. It's insane, right? But it had to happen.
Right.
I don't know.
But because of that, it's going to keep happening because, you know, once you figure out you can make money, more money without doing anything and you're not losing anything.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's nobody goes back to the office, John. Everybody zooms in. Nobody wants to go back. You might as well get rid of all those buildings that were housing the companies. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's the same type of deal. Once you get accustomed and you get used to something and you go, wow, I don't have to pay $2 million in rent every month and I could still have the same bottom line at the end of the year. So from a business standpoint, obviously it makes a shitload of sense. From a fan standpoint, from the fighter standpoint, it's always better in those big arenas. Come on, who doesn't want that? You know what the ambiance feels like in that, John, when you're calling a fight.
Yeah.
Same thing. You don't really call. Do you call a lot of fights in the Apex?
Yeah. I mean, not as many as I did in the past, but I do.
Yeah. So sometimes it's good for an intimate setting, but I think enough is enough. I got to go with Cody on that. I think that's a valid point.
I'm going to get fired if I don't shift the conversation back to the action here. Maybe you fucking call Francis Ngannou. Francis, you got a number for someone over at the fucking PFL. Gotta stop banging on the Apex.
I don't think we said anything wrong.
No, but it provoked thought because I was having some of those feelings myself, and then lo and behold.
I agree with that. But again, if you're in the business of producing content and people say, I don't care where it comes from, the bathroom, the Apex, the T-Mo, what are you going to do?
Right.
I mean, it's a bottom line. It's a numbers-oriented business, man. You know, you got those bean counters and they're going, why would we do the T-Mobile? We can make another $3 million right here just by staying and nobody cares.
Are you a side sleeper, Ray? You sleep on your side, your back.
Yeah, why? Is my hair going crazy?
It's fine. I mean, I think it's part of the appeal. It's why you're...
50% on my right and 50% on my left. Okay. On the side.
That's why your public approval rating is so high, because you're here with your cold brew, you know, it's like, you don't need to brush his teeth, guys. You don't need to brush his fucking teeth.
Yeah, I don't know. I just ate. Why, I got stuff in my teeth.
Did you brush your teeth before the show today?
Definitely not.
Yeah. Ah! He's a man of veracity.
Yeah. Wait, what is the age, what is that age where you're just like, I don't give a shit anymore. You know, I'm not going to shout.
Kenny, I'm just going to.
There's an age. There is an age, Kenny.
Yeah. And that is a valid point. There is an age. when is that?
I think I'm there, actually.
Yeah, you're premature. I got to say, I'm going to go up of 50s. You start going.
Okay.
You know what happens? You start just coming home. You don't even make it in the house. You just piss at the front door. This is what happens. This is what happens when you get older. You just don't give a shit anymore, unfortunately. Kenny, that's a really good point, because things start going sideways. I don't even understand them myself.
I mean, I've started to change at 44. I'll never forget my late grandfather, my maternal grandfather, Howard Grayson, who my son was named after. But towards the end, right, you know, just like stonewalling my grandmother, like, honey, what do you want for lunch? Right. You know, what do you want for lunch? Right. And he looks at his grandsons like, I'm going to smile and not even fucking answer, because the game's on. Right. Watch me do this. And
you're talking relationships. That's a totally different ball game.
But no, I just feel like because candidly, right, a lot of UFC fans feel like I'm a super nice guy. And I am a pretty nice guy, I guess, but not when compared to my twin brother necessarily. And generally speaking, in my family, I'm kind of the asshole, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel like when I'm 60, I'll probably be more of a dick than I am when I'm 44. Yeah. Right?
It goes two ways. You either get nicer or you get real ornery.
Yeah.
Or cantankerous, John.
Oh, look at you with the vocabulary. Yeah. Right, well, one guy who I know brushed his teeth this morning. He's joining us on the guest line right now. Friend of the Anakin Florian podcast, UFC lightweight contender.
Oh,
Matt,
Jesus Christ.
The steamroller Frivola. And I call you a contender because you're on a winning streak right now. It's great to see you, and we're going to get into a lot of different things today. I had my Team Steam shirt on last week, so I wasn't going to run it back consecutive episodes, but it's good to see you, brother. How you doing?
Yeah, doing good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, man.
Yeah.
So, man, your beard looks good.
Before we get into Matt Frivola, because this is a beautiful, unbelievable story to me, but I'll tell you, the guy yesterday in the gym, Frivola, tell him, how was that, the ambiance in the gym yesterday? The sparring, Kenny, was unbelievable between Pampos, Armando, Steve Lee, Nas, Frivola, the kid Montavo, Levon. You know what I loved about yesterday, Matt? It started with guys with the least experience who were good, up to the next level, up to the next, and the guys with the most fights. Probably, I mean, the kid's got a shitload of fights.
Oh, yeah.
But the other kid, Levon, might have, what are they saying? He has 200 kickboxing fights. I mean, Kenny, the atmosphere was crazy. And Nas and Matt went at it yesterday. I mean, the whole gym is clapping. The ambiance was unbelievable. So shout out to all the guys yesterday. They kind of put on the show. You know, I had a couple of privates. I charged them extra like they were at a fight. I said, don't think you're leaving. It's another $150. You had a ringside seat.
One of the things about our gym, like every Saturday, everybody gets their hard sparring in, and it's like smokers, you know, it's like two guys take the cage and they spar hard for three fives, and everybody's around the cage watching, cheering on. And I think it's huge, especially for these young guys coming up. You know, like I say, they're smokers. It's not sparring.
They are smokers, 100%.
Right.
And that gets you used to the apex, because it's the same exact thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah. And it's a different type of pressure, too, in a way, right? Because you got both people, everyone cheering for each other. You're going against a competitive teammate, you know. It's awesome.
It was beautiful. I miss those days. Yesterday, the ambiance, I tell you, as a coach, that's why I say, you guys are asking me, do I still have the passion? Yeah, for days like that, I walked into that gym a little groggy. By the end of those sparring sessions, I didn't even know what to do. I just started lifting weights. I mean, I went nuts.
Yeah, fires you up.
Yeah. All right, well, it's good to have UFC lightweight Matt Frivola with us. How'd my guy Steve Lee do, by the way? Was he getting tuned up or was he tuning others up?
Steve had a good day yesterday.
Good, good. That's my guy right there. But Frivola doesn't have a fucking scratch on him.
Mouth, but it was looking good.
Yeah.
Frivola looking fresh as a daisy. So do you, by the way, know right now who is the number 15 ranked lightweight in the world, Matt? You probably don't know who that is, do you?
No, I don't know right now.
Well, because I guess I'm just curious, like, are you number like 25 in the world? Like, there are probably 70 UFC lightweights, right? So, like, I don't want to discredit you by saying you're 25 or 35. Grant Dawson is the number 15 ranked lightweight in the world right now. Like, do you have any idea where you fall? Probably not.
I just know I'm somewhere in the 30s, but all I have to do is look over to this guy and he tells me where I'm at.
Hey, what? 32, baby, and on the rise.
Big Sal.
I'm 32 and on the rise.
If you don't know, that is the great Sal, the bulldozer for Bola. Goddamn right. So we all always love having you on the program. But today specifically, we did want to just talk to you because the story crossed over a lot of our respective wakes on social media. Your wife, Billy, has donated her kidney or is in the process of doing that to an immediate family member. So what can you tell us about all of that, how it came together and how everybody's doing, you know, now and looking forward?
Yeah. You know, my wife, Billy, she donated her kidney to save her father's life, which was, you know, it's really amazing. And it kind of opened my eyes to organ donation and how much that helps, you know, people around the world. And she's doing well. And Joe Cinelli, her father, is doing well. And everybody's in recovery. And, you know, he's got a new lease on life. He's going to be able to hang out with the grandkids. And we're real happy about that. I'm so proud of my wife.
As you should be.
Yeah.
That's absolutely incredible. And I'm glad I didn't know the timeline, but I'm glad that they are out the other side right now. So how long ago did he get sick and when did you guys sort of start the process of finding out who could be a potential match and your wife's ultimate willingness to go through with all that?
Yeah, you know, he's been on dialysis for a long time now, having to go to the hospital and do all that and not being able to eat healthy foods and all that. And yeah, she got tested and she was a match and she was completely willing and selfless and we finally got the surgery done and now they're both on the recovery and it's all good.
Dude, that's just absolutely incredible. And it's so heartening for a lot of us to hear this and talking about just the overall familial willingness for you and for Billy. It's an incredible story. I have to ask, and maybe somebody in this room knows this. I mean, Kenny was born into a medical family. Can you compete in mixed martial arts? You can compete in mixed martial arts with one kidney, right? Like, I mean, obviously for you to donate a kidney in the prime of your MMA career as a professional athlete would have been challenging, but I'd imagine you can fight with one kidney, right, Ken Flo?
I think so. I'm not sure. I really don't know on that. What's the recovery like, Matt, for her now after getting a kidney removed?
Yeah, she's super sore. You know, like kind of sitting up is tough. I got to kind of help her sit up. But she's back to walking around and she has like
too much.
Like the incision isn't even that big. You know, it's not too much, but she's definitely sore right now. It's like been like 5 days since the surgery. So I think, you know, the next couple days are going to be the toughest, but she's strong. You know, she's strong, stronger than I think even she knows. And she's really proven it to everybody now. And it's amazing to watch. And, you know, she's got her little bell whenever she rings her bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beam roller comes running. So,
yeah. Well, I know you guys have a really special bond and it's only going to bring everybody even closer. So you have our ultimate respect as far as all of that, is concerned. As far as your own timeline is concerned, Maddie, I know that, there are rumors of a UFC event maybe in Brooklyn in April. And, as you know, we've talked to you about this with you before. They seem to like preserve you and your style for these numbered cards. So, I'd imagine you're sort of, you know, staying in the matchmaker's ears, but what can you tell us about 2023 and the first and second quarter and when we might see it?
Yeah, you know, I've been training for that April 8th card. The rumor was Brooklyn, Barclays Center. You know, I'd love to come back to New York and put on a great show, you know, at the Barclays Center. And, you know, we've been talking, I told them pretty much anybody April 8th. But also another opening just happened on that March card, March 18th. I know Chris Duncan just lost his opponent. So I threw my name in the hat for that fight. You know, that guy had a crazy fight with our teammate Charlie. So it'd be nice to get that one back for the team. And, you know, a trip to London does not sound bad.
I love it. All right. Well, hey, if my twin brother doesn't come, maybe you use my two tickets as well for bowl if you end up fighting over there. All right. Before we let you go, I got to get your thoughts on this. And again, appreciate your time on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Sorry, my mic keeps cutting out today. I don't understand exactly why it's turning off on its own, but I would encourage anybody out there. I know we all have our own beliefs, but I am an organ donor on my Florida license, and I would encourage anybody to strongly consider doing that. But all right, so Daniel Cormier is my dear friend and broadcast partner, but he says a lot of ridiculous things. Like he said Zhang Weili is the greatest athlete of all time, and that actually is holding up pretty well. Like I can sit here and say Zhang Weili maybe is top five man or woman I've ever seen. That one's holding up well. But Maddie, he said if Alexander Volkanovsky beats his teammate Islam Makhachev, it'll be the biggest upset in UFC history. So to say that a guy who's won like 22 consecutive fights would be pulling off the biggest upset in UFC history, however much the size discrepancy, to me, it sounds ignorant. So I know for you, Matt, maybe. See, the word ignorant sounds like I'm taking a shot at DC. It's not.
Of course not. But no, mate, stupid ass would have been better.
Well, no, maybe it's like a hot take for ratings. I don't know. But yeah. Matt, maybe for you, right? Like Matt Frivola is a lightweight contender. So perhaps you would have liked to see.
No.
God, I'm getting myself in trouble today. Hey, Matt, maybe you would have liked to see a lightweight be the guy who Islam defends the belt for the first time against and not a featherweight coming up. But how do you handicap Volkanovski's chances overall and his chances against, say, like, versus, say, like, Beneil Dariush?
Yeah, I don't agree with that statement either. You know, isn't Volk like the number one pound for pound right now?
Huh. Maybe the number one pound for pound fighter in the world. I don't know.
Yeah. How could you say that if he wins, it's the biggest upset? You know, I know Islam's good, but he has been beat. You know, he lost his UFC debut. But you know, I'm interested in that fight. Like, I want to see. I think I like watching people chase greatness. Like when Stylebender went up to challenge Blachowicz, you know, even in a losing effort, I really respected that, you know, he went up and he went for it. And that's what Volk's doing. He's going to go up a weight class and he's going to chase greatness. So you can't not root for that.
All right, Matt, the steamroller for Volley. You can check him out, by the way, for the merchandise on millions.co. All sorts of good team steam designs are out there, and I hope to see you either in London or in New York. But please send our best to your inspirational wife, Billy. And, you know, we appreciate just the whole good-natured, tight-knit core of your family. And I don't know, man, it's a pretty special thing. We wanted to highlight it today. So,
And Matty, I'm saying this because I want to be held accountable. I'll be there around 6:30. I'm bringing dessert. So don't go. Save it, man. So tell Big Sal I'm coming over finally.
There you go. He's coming.
Yo, baby.
I'll be there, Sal. Get me a recline. Sal, get the recliner ready. I might not leave.
Yeah. And the amount of support that I made that post, you know, I'm always a little iffy about putting too much personal family stuff out there in the social media world. But the amount of support and that people are saying is really, really lifting her spirits. And actually, Alex Cohen, Steve Cohen's wife, hit me up about my wife and was really about it. And then we got an invite to the Islanders game on the 27th in the owner's suite. So she's pumped about that too. And you know, I gotta keep this relationship with the Cohens going. You know, I wanna tell Steve Cohen tell Steve Cohen to hit up Dana and teach him how to take care of his athletes. You know.
Hey, you know, you deserve it all. And I got to say, man, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it's hard to get embedded in the New York market with those sports teams, even as a UFC fighter. right? Like Uriah Faber's the king of Sacramento. Ken Flo being a pro fighter in Boston, like no one gave a shit in his prime. Like they did, with respect, right? But no, but it's like the Patriots and the Red Sox and the Celtics and the Bruins. Obviously, when he went to TD Garden, it was a big deal. But no, I give you credit for carving out space with New York sports teams. And, you know, please send our best to Billy and Sal and the whole clan. And we'll see you soon, brother.
I will. Coach, we got to tell him about my letter that I wrote to Dana White that I'm
definitely not the time or place. Let's save it. Hey, Matt, you're always welcome on the podcast. So John's already insulted enough people today. I say we leave it at that. He took down DC and Kenny in one swoop. Oh my God.
I'm rocked right now. I'm rocked. Someone just stopped the fight. I don't know what's happening.
All right. Well, I guess we'll take Longo's word for it.
Maddie, let's save it.
And next time, go ahead, Matt.
I know I broke some news. You guys said that the UFC April 8th is going to be in Brooklyn. You know, hopefully that's true. But I got a little another thing. Billy Q's got a big fight coming.
Are you breaking that we could hear?
All I could say is keep an eye out for Billy Q fight news coming soon. It's a big fight in April.
Great. I love it. That's exciting.
I want to be
Wait, hold on, Matt. That's in April.
Yeah, it's going to be in April. I'll tell you when I see you, but it's good.
Can you get on that freaking card, please?
Hey,
let's go.
Ready? We're getting on that card. Whether we go to
all right, awesome,
or we're going to bring the house down in Brooklyn. You know how we do, Coach.
Awesome, man. All right, let's do it, man.
All right, hey, enjoy the rest of your Sunday, Matt. We appreciate the time. Next time you come on, there'll be no Ray Longo to cut you off. So,
No.
All right, guys. Nice talking to you.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, Matt. Ray Longo.
Matt Frivola.
Keep everybody in suspense while John, you're on a roll today. Oh, Matty's back.
I'm back.
Wait, Big Sal had something to say?
Yeah, we're not going to cut you off, Sal.
Take the day off. Let me know. I'll come in and I'll do a little fun.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good. Thank you very much. The Frivola clan joining us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. I'm the president of Team Florian. Like, I feel like as the biggest Kenny Florian fan in the world, sometimes I can hit people with a dose of reality. Like, if the dude was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, he'd have a fucking statue.
All right. Really? This is unbelievable today.
I feel like I'm just speaking truth all the time, and I'm just perpetually misunderstood.
Spitting fire. You're spitting
Kenny.
Fire.
There was a lot expected of Islam Makhachev, even when he made his UFC debut. That's why when he lost to Adriano Martins early on, it was like, whoa. Was that his first or second fight? Maybe his first fight in the UFC, right?
I think so. Yeah, we called it.
But isn't, like, dude, Adriano Martins beating that version of Islam Makhachev is a bigger upset than Volkanovski beating this version, in my opinion. I just think that is just a huge stretch. But
how many guys have gone up in weight and won? No matter who the champ was.
No, duly noted. I just think.
You know what I'm saying?
I just think,
Israel is a talented guy. And Jan wasn't the best heavyweight champ by far, right? He's a great fighter, but he couldn't pull it off. Holloway couldn't pull it off against Poirier. I mean, I don't know. Am I missing something?
No, I think these are valid points. I'm just sitting here saying that Alexander Volkanovski is one of the greatest of all time. Maybe the greatest featherweight of all time already, despite the fact that Jose Aldo and Max Holloway can also lay claim to that. I don't think Alexander Volkanovski beating Kamaru Usman or fucking Leon Edwards at 70 would be the biggest upset in MMA history, right? Like, who are we talking about? The biggest upsets in UFC history don't involve, like, all-time Hall of Fame fighters. But, hey, man, you know, DC's podcast does a little bit better than this one, so maybe.
Wait, DC's got a podcast? Where is it? What's the name of it?
I don't know. I think Ryan Clark's on it. He's the man. Hey, Ray, thanks for the extended time. And, have a great day and a better evening. Just be on time later today. Be on time later, okay?
I tell you, wait, before we go. That is an unbelievable, fantastic, feel-good story. I mean, I was blown away. When he told me that, Kenny, I was like, because he kind of, he might have nonchalanted it, like it was nothing. I'm like, this is, man, I tell you what, just the ultimate act of selflessness, man. I don't think it gets any better than that. So hats off to Billy. She is the real hero of all of this, man. That's just absolutely fantastic. And Man, I'm blown. That shit yeah. kills me, man. Really kills me.
It's blows my mind.
You know, and I know if I ever had a kidney problem, John would probably donate his kidney to me.
No, I would.
Can I put you down for that? Because
yes, you can. Let me talk to Chrissy first.
Next week.
But it's interesting. Candidly, as an identical twin, a monozygotic identical twin, I've thought a lot about organ donation and the possibility of giving my twin brother. More than likely, he'll be giving me an organ. But
right.
You know, we'll see how it goes.
So you thought about giving him an organ, just make sure his diet's on point every day and he's doing his exercise. Yeah. Keep that guy healthy, John.
Well, you take care of yourself. Thanks for the extended time. That was a spirited Ray Longo minute today. And we'll talk to you early next week, buddy, when I get back from Rio de Janeiro.
Yeah. Safe trip, buddy. I will talk to you guys next week. Kenny, as always, right. man, looking sharp. And listen, when you were in Boston, you were always my hero. It didn't matter. You were a hero in New York. So I don't care what this guy says about Boston.
Thank you. I just want you to know that. Guy. Yeah.
Thanks, Ray.
Take it easy, guys.
All right, that is going to do it. But rest assured, we're doing two episodes a week now. So we're back in your life probably Thursday. I will be in Rio at that point in time. Don't forget about the Anakin Florian Rewind exclusively on UFC Fight Pass, where we look back at a UFC fight. And the one that's up there right now, we look back at Brandon Moreno's UFC debut. Where has he come since then? As he gets ready for another title fight against Davison Figueiredo. Also, don't forget for your merchandise, AnakinFlorianPodcast.com. Promo code LONGO to get 10 or 15% off your order. KennyFlorianMartialArts.com is live for all of your mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu needs. And our Brazil Designs One More Sleep merch can be had at millions.co. We are back later this week. We'll get into UFC 286 predictions. And excuse me, we will get into UFC 286, the trilogy between Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, and predictions for UFC 283, Teixeira versus Hill, coming up Saturday night live on pay-per-view. With that, thank you to our guests, Ray Longo, Matt the Steamroller Frivola. We will talk to you guys later this week. For producer Cody Merrill and Ken Flom, John Amps, and so long for now. Talk to you in a few days. Until then, yo later. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.